Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, before we start the show, here's a question for you. Do you feel younger than you appear? We all kind of do. I feel like I'm still 7 years old. But do you have under-eye bags, crow's feet, and wrinkles? They often add years and years to your appearance. And that sting when someone thinks you're 10 years older than you really are, crushing to the ego, and the confidence level plummets. But let's talk about a quick and easy fix called Plexiderm. It's a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates crow's feet, wrinkles, and under-eye bags in just a matter of minutes. That's right, minutes. It's exactly what you need to win the battle against Father Time and restore your confidence. And if you don't believe it, I didn't believe it either until I did the test, until I got my canister, stood in front of the mirror, 10 minutes, all of those fine lines around my eyeballs went right away, vanished. So go to triplexiderm.com, use my code SEXYLIBERAL for 50% off plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off plus an extra $10 off. This offer is also available by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning the code SEXYLIBERAL. Plexiderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit triplexiderm.com today and use the code SEXYLIBERAL at checkout. That's triplexiderm.com, code SEXYLIBERAL. And now, let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Zeska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Mitchell, no, he was talking to a reporter.
Yeah, but I think I woke him up.
Yeah, good notes?
Verbatim.
He really said that about Mrs. Graham. Well, I'll cut the words of her tit and print it.
Well,
this is a family newspaper. You know, once when I was reporting, Lyndon Johnson's top guy gave me the word. They were looking for a successor for J. Edgar Hoover. I wrote it, and the day it appeared, Johnson held a press conference and appointed Hoover head of the FBI for life. When he was done, turned to his top guy, and the president said, call Ben Bradley and tell him fuck you. Well, everybody said, you did it, Ben. You screwed up. You stuck us with Hoover forever. I screwed up. But I wasn't wrong. How much can you tell me about Deep Throat?
How much do you need to know?
You trust him?
Yeah.
I can't do the reporting for my reporters, which means I have to trust them. And I hate trusting anybody. Run that, baby.
Bob Zeska!
Eat shit, Bob!
The Bob Zeska Show!
We're into it now. The impeachment of Donald Trump. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, November 12, 2019, and this is the Bob Zeska Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. BubbleGenius.com, if you don't know, the greatest soap in the universe. Go there, buy tons of soap, especially now for the holidays. Oh, and hi, what's up? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 1027 of the Trump crisis, day 52 of the impeachment of Donald Trump. 356 days until the 2020 presidential election. And let's bring him in, my good friend Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. It's great to be here.
Hello.
He's Bob. I'm Buzz. We're the guys who taught Sean Spicer how to dance. That's why we had to turn down the gig as the advance team for Donald Trump Jr.'s book tour. Oh, man, I'm looking around. Is it cold? It's like 4 degrees in Chicago this morning. Is it cold air in D.C., Bob?
Yeah, my underpants are frozen.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, that's how you know it's cold.
Freezing.
Looking at the national weather map, it's cold over a whole lot of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cold. Kellyanne Conway.
Wait. How cold is it? I was.
Well, Bob, I'm so glad you asked. It's so cold, Kellyanne Conway had to put on a light sweater. Even she felt the chill. This struck me as odd. Now, this was really an odd thing, I thought. The impeachment hearings on TV haven't even started yet, and it's already been voted best new show of the season.
I intend to binge watch it. It's starting tomorrow.
I didn't see that. I don't know how they do. I guess they do that with books, you know. Before
that's true. Out. Yeah, yeah.
The Republicans are out with a new wish list of witnesses for the impeachment hearings. And apparently, Bob, they have not learned their lesson.
I don't know.
Now they also want testimony from Ted Nugent, Hillary's email server, and Santa Claus.
Jesus.
Funnier if you say Santa. I'm really excited today, though. I really am. I just got the nicest compliment on Twitter. I wasn't expecting this. Mm-hmm. Somebody said to me, I'm an okay boomer. I thought, wow, that's...
I'm not going anywhere near any of that shit. I am telling
you
now.
Good to know that I'm okay. I'm okay. You're okay.
You know, like a dutiful Gen Xer, I'm staying the fuck out of the okay boomer controversy. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. No goddamn way. Okay, my friend, it's great to talk to you again. Lots to discuss today, obviously, impeachment and everything starting tomorrow. But as you heard at the top of the show, we got to talk about John Oliver's final segment the other night.
Of course we do. I texted you as soon as I watched the playback of it.
It's amazing that here's this guy, Bob Murray, that I'm now linked to because of this show, because I've made a big deal out of John Oliver saying, eat shit, Bob.
Eat shit,
right.
Bob.
Right, that thing. One, yeah. Yeah. And so, but this is a serious thing that any one of us could get caught up in. And that is these slap laws that allow anyone to sue anyone else if they don't like the cut of their jib. If you say something on Twitter, if you say something elsewhere that someone finds offensive or derogatory in any way, they can sue you and basically drive you into the ground with legal fees. And that's what Bob Murray's been doing with all kinds of people. And it doesn't matter if there are anti-slap laws in your state, they can just sue you in a different state.
Thankfully, I mean, and this doesn't cover everything, of course, but it helps us a little bit.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the judge in Bob Murray's case against John Oliver ruled that but that doesn't count in comedy. If it's something that's blatantly clearly not true, if it's said as an exaggeration of reality, then that's entirely different. If it's done for comedic effect or for satire, that is protected speech.
100%. I thought that was settled. I thought it was all done with People versus Larry Flint and that Supreme Court case and the idea of satire being permissible speech according to the Supreme Court. I think that was all done. And then, you know, you get all these slap laws allowing people to target you like this. And of course, it's become a tool of the Trumper red hat right. We're talking about the party that spent years fighting for tort reform. And now they're the party of lawsuits, because look who's at the top of the heap. Donald Trump, who hasn't met anyone he hasn't sued. He sues everybody. And again, it's the...
Right.
I kind of saw this a little bit with the history of Glenn Greenwald, of all people. Glenn Greenwald used to sue people just to bankrupt them with legal fees, just to bury them in legal fees, and then just walk away and say, never mind. Forget it. And it's the worst kind of behavior you could possibly imagine, weaponizing the legal system, burdening the judicial system with these cockamamie lawsuits. And thank God John Oliver is standing up to Bob Murray, this coal guy who with links to Donald Trump. The best thing, obviously, about that bit the other night was the gigantic Broadway extravaganza.
Oh, my God.
That culminated.
Actual Broadway singers and dancers.
I know.
Repeating or listing impossibly true, you know, suppositions about Bob Murray.
Yeah.
And you know, just a crazy, wild, outrageous stuff. And to see real professionals doing a great number. Just that one moment that sticks in my mind is when John Oliver strikes down one of the dancers as Nancy Kerrigan. And...
Yeah.
Just if you have that on video, if you have a way of going back and looking at that mm-hmm. part again, just the acting of that one dancer made the whole production. But the whole thing with the music and the fireworks, and they're out on the street filming, and it's just, you know, it's a huge, it's like a motion picture like production, which is another way, aside from legal fees, that John Oliver is spending AT&T's yeah. money.
Right. And everything culminated in this, which will be featured on this year's show quite often, I guarantee it.
Fireworks.
Yep, the fireworks. That is...
Oh, that is marvelous.
God bless America.
That is just great.
That show... There's something about John Oliver where he is a goddamn political right. comedy machine. I mean, he is indefatigable. He does not tire. He does not complain about the fire hose of news. He just presses forward with maybe the best half hour of political and social commentary you've ever heard. And they put maximum effort into every single show.
It helps that they have an HBO-sized budget to do that show mm-hmm. with, and it could not be done without an incredible staff of experienced, clever researchers.
Yeah.
And you know, we say bad things, rightfully so, mostly about corporations and mm-hmm. corporate lawyers, but this is a case where the corporate lawyers are standing up for the product, standing up for the artist.
Yeah.
And that's always good. That does my heart good.
That's the one thing that terrifies me, is getting sued by one of these rat bastards and having to deal with all of that. Fortunately, I have Charles J. Bowen and the Bowen Law Group in my corner. So that's always good news.
Do I get a piece of that by any chance? Can I get...
Sure.
Because I got nobody, Bob. I'm as vulnerable as they come.
I don't know if you know this about me, but I used to get cease and desist orders like once a week when I was doing cartoons. And one of my favorites was when I did this cartoon about Dick Vitale, sports right. broadcaster Dick Vitale, and how he right. is. Talk about being indefatigable when he's doing March Madness in college basketball, which I don't follow, but I know enough about it to know who Dick Vitale is and what his story is. He is unstoppable. So I did this cartoon one time in which he was continuing to talk about college football with all of these things being done to him, like a rusty farm tool lodged in his head, and then he's racked in the nuts by a dwarf on roller skates, and just all these things happen and happen and happen to him in this cartoon. And the next day, I'm up in New York City to go into a meeting or something like that, and my phone rings. And it's one of the people back in my animation studio saying, Bob, you're going to want to sit down for this. I said, what? Dick Vitale saw your cartoon and did not like it and is sending you a cease and desist order to take down the cartoon. I said, what do you think? Should I take down the cartoon? And they said, no. So I said, no, we're not going to take down the cartoon. And right. thank God Dick Vitale did not sue me.
That's so often the case. And you know, I tell this to friends and family. If you have a concern, a lot of times all you have to do is pay a lawyer a nominal fee
yeah.
to send a cease and desist order.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you ever have to follow up on it.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised how many times in the other walks of life that the cease and desist order is all it takes, or mm-hmm. letter is all it takes.
Yep.
And, you know, so it is a tool for just that. But,
I
free speech continues to prevail so far, despite the tireless efforts to suppress it.
You know, I did one cartoon with Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses working at a McDonald's and taking orders at a McDonald's, and then every order he was singing back in his Guns N' Roses Axl Rose right. style. Axl Rose got pissed off at me, sent me a cease and desist order over that cartoon. It was an amazing thing to deal with.
in both of these cases, I think really what you were doing was flattering them. I mean, what you were saying, no, seriously, you know, despite the violent, horrible things that were happening to Dick Vitale, he persisted in your portrayal of him.
Yeah.
He didn't succumb into a heap. He persisted. And that was really your point. And really, isn't that kind of a compliment?
Yeah. I mean, it's a surefire sign the subject has no sense of humor about themselves whatsoever. I mean, that was always a great indicator for me. I should up the ante next time around. It was actually encouraging me to do more cartoons like that. So
go ahead, cross this line.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the thing I keep thinking about every time I tweet at Donald Trump, every time I quote tweet one of his ridiculous blurts, I feel like the very next day there's going to be a knock at my door and it's IRS auditors saying, "Hey, what's going on in there?" And they end up coming in just out of, you know, revenge. I think it's something that he's entirely capable of doing. I think Richard Nixon did shit like that. You know, got the IRS to go after.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I'm more worried about PBS auditors, but that's another story.
Yeah, I want to talk about that here in a second. Yeah. But, you know, speaking of Donald Trump, he was at the Economic Club of New York today, which I'm surprised he has the guts to show his face up there in New York City and do any public speaking, because he has
not
been
friendly territory.
Yeah, and the Red Hats don't know this, but for the last how many decades, four decades, Donald Trump has been a laughingstock, a punchline in New York City. So going back there in this context was probably a recipe for disaster, and of course it kind of was. He bombed a little bit. There was one clip I wanted to play here of Donald Trump talking about negative interest on loans from the Fed, which is just an insane idea. I mean, you talk about running up a gigantic federal budget deficit, a gigantic national debt. Start approving loans in which the lender has to pay you interest on that loan. That's what negative interest is. Donald Trump's on top of it. He wants the money. In fact, he said, "I want some of that money." And then a couple people clap and he goes, "Oh yeah, only the smart people are clapping." Here's Donald Trump at the Economic Club of New York earlier today.
"We are actively competing with nations who openly cut interest rates so that now many are actually getting paid when they pay off their loan. Known as negative interest. Who ever heard of such a thing?
Who ever heard of it?
Give me some of that.
Give me some of
that money. I want some of that money.
Crook.
Our Federal Reserve doesn't let us do it."
Wait, what was that? I got to go back. "The Federal Reserve doesn't let us do it." No, no,
right.
Play that one more time. Let's go rewind a second here.
Doesn't let us do it.
Yeah, yeah, wait. Yeah.
"Some of that money. Our Federal Reserve doesn't let us do it." "I don't say thank you, thank you. The smart people are clapping."
Yeah.
"Only the smart people are clapping."
Oh, poor Biff. He's turned into Jeb Bush already.
Please clap.
The rest of you. Here's the problem. Here's the problem. Yeah. He's gotten so tiny that a lot of people couldn't hear him.
Right. Yeah. "You speak up, Mr. President. We can't hear you or see you anymore because you're, you know, about 6 inches below the podium.
Smaller and smaller."
Yeah. And then the only thing I think of is poor Jeb Bush. You remember the please clap thing, which was the death knell of his campaign in 2016.
Please clap.
Yeah. Poor low energy Jeb Bush. Okay. So you had a blockbuster tweet the other day about the coverage that we're going to be hearing from as far as the impeachment goes tomorrow, the first public impeachment hearings.
Well, I'm sure there have been discussions. There were discussions, I know, inside PBS about whether to carry it in primetime this time around as they did in 1973. And the context here is that PBS was founded on impeachment hearings and Sesame Street. Those two things in the early 1970s that put PBS on the media map and in the consciousness of America. And people started watching the network, and they watched for hours, and they watched past midnight as the day's hearings were replayed at night.
Yeah.
And, of course, there are other ways to get the show. And with each passing hour, I suspect there'll be even more options for getting it. But it struck me as odd that PBS had decided not to do it, and I saw that Bill Moyers and other journalists were objecting. So it was really two tweets, and they were both very innocent. And I didn't at PBS in the first tweet, and because I was mentioning other networks, and I didn't want to at all of them. I just, you know, I wanted to stay out of that.
Right.
But I wanted to communicate to people that PBS would carry the live coverage during the day, that they were considering carrying it at night, and that all the other networks, cable and broadcast, would also be carrying the hearings and be streaming and stuff.
Yeah.
But and I followed that up with one that I did at PBS, in which I urged people to contact them and urge them to change their mind about not carrying the hearings in a replay at night this time. And I thought, well, you know, I normally, for something I post, get a couple hundred likes. You know, this mm-hmm. will be like that. This, you know, and I did it as a public service to get information out there to let people know, yes, it's going to be on. Here's where it's going to be on. Here's how that's going to work. And then got the surprising news that PBS had, after being founded on this in the early 70s, after being part of its mission statement to cover these sorts of things, was not going to do it this time. And I did not expect 9,000 retweets and 16,000 likes and 1,000 comments and hundreds of new followers in 24-hour period.
Wow, 16,000 likes, huh? Jesus.
Yeah, and it frightened me, frankly. I didn't want that high a profile.
You're doing it wrong. If that's frightening you.
Because I realized that this particular tweet seemed to have a great deal of power. Mm. People responded en masse to it. And with great power, as you know, Bob, comes great responsibility.
Yes, indeed.
And so I watched the responses. And this is really what I want to talk about, not the number of tweets, because I'd really rather, frankly, go back into the bushes, but
the Buzz Burbank approach. Nobody, don't read my stuff. Leave me alone to talk to myself.
Well, you know, too much scrutiny can be a bad thing.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. I certainly understand.
But what this is really about is about the response to the kinds of responses I heard, because most of the people who responded, I got a pretty clear sense that they're all progressives. Mm-hmm. What was interesting is how the progressive broke down, how they broke down into groups of types of responses. Uh-huh. I am so heartened and so proud to say that the vast, vast majority of retweets to PBS, they got some mail to read, the vast majority of retweets to them were very kind. They said, please, PBS, this is your mission. And, sure, you know, we're monthly subscribers. We work during the day. We really would appreciate it if it was on at night. They were very civil. The vast majority of progressives who responded to this were very civil. And then there's a segment of people who say, you're in with the Republicans. Now you're one of them. They've been taken over by the Koch brothers. And some of this, there may be grains of, maybe more than grains of truth to that.
Yeah.
But this is not not a time to do that. And there were other people who, and this is what scared me the most about the responsibility here. So many people, again, a minority, but so many people saying, that's it, I'm out, no more money for PBS. This was not what I wanted to accomplish. I wanted to inform people, and in the case of PBS, I wanted them to do what most people did, which was nicely urge PBS to carry the program, most always with the word please in it.
Yeah.
And that did my heart so much good, and I hope PBS sees that. I have not liked any of the ones that have attacked PBS in some way or accused them of anything. I've only liked the ones that said, you know, please, or just gave a very humble reason for wanting PBS to carry that programming. Scary new experience for me, and I had to share it with somebody. And you and this audience are the only people I can really share that with.
Yeah, well, you're going to get lots of sympathy from me on this, because it's like a feature of social media where you post something and half the people get the wrong idea by what you posted. And I posted a GIF on Twitter today. It's of Captain Kirk screaming, I read the comments. And it was because I actually did. I made the mistake of reading the comments under my Salon piece, which is up today about the impeachment. And it was basically, in a word, it was a chorus of...
shit!
Yeah!
Eat shit, Bob!
He's done it again!
I know! Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Good night. All right.
Your work here is through.
Well, again, you know, it's indicative of social media. Just ask Rocky Mountain Mike, for example. What happens when you post something on Twitter and people don't read the article? Well, they end up stepping right into the propeller and not knowing, and then it's frustrating, and then we all get pissed off. And
I see some of that, and I see the conspiracy folks among progressives. And I see, like I said, I saw kind of how we all broke down. But the really heartening thing here is that the vast majority of the people said, please. And I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
Because I did not, and I know that sounds a very little house on the prairie, but it's really very important at a time when civility, especially in politics, is nil.
Well, and the other thing, yesterday I posted something in support of Joe Biden. I'm not endorsing Joe Biden. I'm not saying, please vote for Joe Biden. Yeah, but I was watching his town hall on CNN last night. And you know what? Let's be perfectly honest about it. He did great in that town hall. Maybe one of his best TV performances so far in this particular campaign. And all I did was say that. He looked together. His experience was on display. He looked presidential. And I thought it was good. It was good for him. And therefore, I think it's good for the country to have a solid example of Democratic politics on display on CNN in prime time.
Well, yeah, I didn't see it. I'm glad too, but I think it's important to underscore that he's just fine, because there's a campaign saying he's not, and I understand some of that. Mm-hmm. I really do. But, and I have my own concerns, to be honest.
So do I. But
it's important that we all see that he's just more than fine, really. Mm-hmm. That he's capable of a good performance with no gaffes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't see it. I didn't really know that it was going to be on. But you know what else? This is another good thing, I think, in that. I haven't decided on this, but this is something I'm considering, and that is that if judging what I'm seeing from the polls, what voters are willing to support, and judging from that tweet that I just talked about, that said to me that the vast majority of progressives are moderate progressives.
Yeah.
Easy does it. Yes, let's have a revolution. Slowly,
right,
as opposed to with a sudden bang. I'm seeing that side of it too. Like I said, I'm undecided. I support whoever the Democratic nominee is. I just this is an important electability thing to a certain extent.
Sure.
That I'm considering.
Yeah. Well, I think we all have to wrap our heads around the idea that maybe Joe Biden's going to be the nominee, and eventually we're all going to have to find a way to support him, whether we like him or not. And that's a fact. That's a fact of life.
True of all candidates, in fact.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it could have been Elizabeth Warren up there last night, and I probably would have said the same thing about Elizabeth Warren given her performance, but. You know, it was the replies were along the lines of, usual corporatist shill stuff, you moderates are screwing everything up. And I'm not even a moderate, for God's sake. But, the point being is that, well, sometimes people don't understand tweets and they don't read what you've said before they comment.
Right.
And that's annoying. Right. And then there was another case where it wasn't even a real thing. I posted a screen grab from the open of HBO's Silicon Valley, which is one of the funniest shows on television. But they do this thing during the opening theme is of this computerized sort of CG overhead view of Silicon Valley with all the different corporations and everything. And the Facebook logo I thought was really clever, because this season they're spelling Facebook using Cyrillic characters, using Russian characters. And so I made a screen grab of that and posted that. And of course I got a bunch of comments. Well, that's not the real Russian word. The real Russian word is this. I'm like, oh my God, now I know what it's like to be a woman on Twitter. I got well actuallyed on a joke from HBO's Silicon Valley. I now feel like I'm in at least a little bit solidarity with all the feminists who get harassed on Twitter with guys going, hey, well, actually, that's not the real Russian word.
I hope you've learned your lesson about upholding humor.
I know. It's just another round of eat shit, Bob.
Shit!
Yes, everybody sing fireworks! Yes. Karen. Okay, so down to actual business here.
Okay, if we must.
I thought this was a fascinating little bit of polling here as far as illustrating the support for impeachment across the country. Someone applied impeachment support or lack of support by, in each state, and then compile that into electoral votes. You know, if there's support for impeachment in a particular state, well, that state gets the electoral vote. So as of right now, the support for impeachment is at 348 electoral votes, and Republican opposition to impeachment is at 190 electoral votes. So,
I hope that's dramatic. I hope it's meaningful. Does this ever happen to you? I had a great day yesterday. I got a gazillion the likes.
That never happens to me. I never have great days anymore.
It was a great day. I got a gazillion likes on a tweet. One of my voiceover for commercials aired on Monday Night Football.
Oh, that's great.
I don't watch it, but I understand, you know, some people do.
Congratulations. That's excellent. Yeah.
Thanks. And then Sean Spicer got voted off Dancing with the Stars. So I really felt like I'd had a really good day. And then I woke up this morning with an overwhelming sense of doom. Does this happen to you or anybody ever? I don't, because I have no, why? Yeah, I'm a very logical person. So I ask myself, okay, why do you feel this way? And I don't know, you know, I just do.
Are you sure you're not a Gen Xer? Are you sure you're a boomer? Because that's like a Gen Xer thing. Feeling good one day and then waking up with a sense of doom.
By showtime, I'm pleased to say I'm fine. Yeah. I'm no longer a danger to society or myself. And I'm ready to go. But, I started out with that sort of sense of gloom this morning. It's been rough. This has been a rough ride, this whole impeachment thing.
It is. It's an up and down roller coaster. But here's something to cheer you up a little bit. And there's positive majority support for impeachment in Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. Just looking at some red states here. Arizona, now the red state, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, those guys, they're now in support of impeachment. And it's just, it's spreading. And I think the way the Democrats have been comporting themselves has contributed to that, because I think the contrast is becoming clear. And one of the things I think we're going to see coming out of tomorrow's hearings is that people are going to realize that the Democrats aren't doing another political pie fight here.
I hope that's apparent.
Yeah. Well, they're engaged in the seriousness of the endeavor. The impeachment of the president is a serious goddamn thing. And they are applying that level of seriousness to it. And I think that's extraordinary and a good move.
I do believe that it's a majority in favor of impeachment among the American people. And that does me good to know that.
Yeah.
At the same time, in my sense of doom that I woke up this morning, I turn on the CBS World News Roundup, we're at the end. It's 8 minutes past the hour, and they reported on a new poll that they had that said that a majority of Americans said that they would not be moved one way or another by the televised impeachment hearings, that people are entrenched in their views. Now, here we are discussing this the day before the open impeachment hearings, and I know what the Democrats are going to do, and I know how tightly organized they are. This is actually highly scripted. They know who's going to say what, basically, and who's going to ask what. That's how organized this thing is. And as professionally as it will be carried out, as you've just described, I'm not sure that a large segment of the country will even watch. I don't think that it's, you know, I just worry, especially after hearing this poll, that our worst nightmare could come true, that it will not move the needle at all.
I don't think that that's going to be the ultimate outcome. I think people are going to be blown away by this. I mean, from the leaks that have been coming out, I think the Democrats, especially on the Intelligence Committee, are kind of hinting at the fact that this is going to be blockbuster material. We're talking about the Mueller testimony in terms of cinematic quality and whether or not it's a blockbuster or whether or not it fizzles or whatever. Those kinds of expectations being applied to the Mueller testimony. But this, they're saying already, which is kind of dangerous to kind of set the expectations at Blockbuster before it's happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. But if they're that confident in it, I have no reason to doubt them. I think this is going to be, especially with Bill Taylor, especially with the format. I mean, I don't know if you've had a chance to peruse some of the rules, but I think the way this is starting is not with every member of the House Intelligence Committee asking a question.
Right.
The way this is going to work is either Schiff or the counsel for the Democrats will begin the questioning of, in this case, Bill Taylor and George Kent. And then the Republicans will have a chance to do their 45 minutes, and then it'll swap back and forth with 45 minute chunks of each. But remember, I think his name is Barry Burke, that guy. Remember that questioning of Corey Lewandowski that we all saw that was really sharp and really precise and kind of nailed Corey Lewandowski? That's the kind of thing that we can expect at the outset of these hearings. And then that'll be followed by, once the 45 minute blocks of questioning by each side's counsel is done, that's when each individual member of the House, member of the Intelligence Committee, will be able to ask their questions. And that's kind of when the shit show will be, because that's usually when it does.
This will be less of a circus-like atmosphere, even with the Republicans involved, because each side has that 45 minutes instead of 5 minutes back and forth between guys trying to get sound bites on TV.
Mm-hmm.
With 45 minutes at a pop, you can actually get some information. But here's my concern. You could spend hundreds of millions of dollars making a Blockbuster movie, but that doesn't guarantee people will either go see it or like it if they do. And this is, I'm normally the glass half full guy, but I worry. This is like, for me, this is like pre-show jitters, maybe. We're at a moment in time that's suspended between we got this and all is lost.
And
you know, we're on that brink right now. And this is for all the marbles, kids. That's why I'm nervous. Not because I think the effort will fail. I've wanted, you know, this all along. But I like I said, I have a little pre-show jitters here about it, hoping that indeed this goes off as we hope and expect.
I think we should all set our expectations to the appropriate levels. Certainly there aren't going to be many red hats who are there aren't going to be many red hats who are going to have their minds changed by what happens here. There will even still be some contrarians, people who think that both sides are equally guilty in all of this, and they're not going to come out of their trenches based on any of this. But all it really takes, I mean, remember, we're talking about national elections that are won and lost by 2 or 3 percentage points. So we're talking about small turns of the dial making a huge amount of difference.
We'll take what we can get. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's all that really needs to happen. And
okay, let me share some bright news then to add to the bright news that you started with. And that is that in that Fox News poll that showed that half of America was in favor of impeachment and removal and the other half is not, that they were pretty evenly divided. Well, here's the cool thing about the nearly half who are against impeachment and removal. A third of them say they're willing to listen.
There you go.
Now, do you see what that did? So this is encouraging. And so if these hearings can, in fact, change the minds of that one third of one half, oh, man, I hate the fractions.
Yeah.
But if that many people can be changed, watch the numbers change on who favors impeachment and who's against it. I think we'll see a really big jump. I think you could see, by my math, and I'm no math whiz, but by my math, Trump's support would drop from around 36% to around 23%.
Oh, yes, that's what I like to hear. Yeah, absolutely.
So there's the upside. You've heard my dark side. There's my bright side.
There you go.
I'm a Libra.
I'm a Libra.
I got both.
Well, here's the thing that's going to drive me batshit tomorrow, and that is when Jim Jordan and the others start acting like the monkeys they are, throwing their own feces and driving into the hearing room in their clown car, etc., trying to make a big mockery of the entire process. And my thing is, I'm going to see Lots of liberals saying, hey, why don't the sergeant-at-arms go and lock up those guys? Throw them in jail now. No. You see, here's what happened.
Because really, it would be very satisfying if they did.
It would be extraordinarily satisfying.
Maybe just a couple of sacrificial lambs, maybe. I don't know. Set an example for the rest of the class. I don't know.
Well, of course, including me, we would all love is to see Jim Jordan get locked up in prison overnight. I mean, or in some, you know. The Capitol Police have a holding cell, maybe in there. Any number of options along those lines. But here's the thing. When it comes to impeachment, we're talking about a president who may be only the third president to ever be impeached. The very fact that the Democrats are engaged in an impeachment process now leading toward almost an inevitable impeachment is as fierce as you can possibly get per the Constitution. And I think the fact that according to the rules that were approved on the floor of the House, any Republican who obstructs this process, including Donald Trump, including any members of the committee, those are going to become new impeachment articles. Donald Trump himself is going to get punished with any kind of obstruction that's going on of these hearings and of the congressional process and all of this. So they are getting punished. It's just not going to be this big whiz bang set of fireworks with people coming in with handcuffs and cable ties and locking up guys like Jim Jordan in little teeny tiny offices somewhere off the hearing room. This is not going to happen.
Yeah, this is exactly what I laid out in your show last week, is that first and foremost, these incidents of obstruction, these refusals to testify, Mulvaney and the rest, those are items to be listed under the article of obstruction of Congress and or obstruction of justice. And they are being noted and they are being listed and they will be part of that impeachment. But at the same time, there's really hope that we're going to learn quite a bit in these hearings, and I know I for one will be popping more corn.
I think here's
the thing about the Republican strategy. I call it a 3D strategy. It's a defense when you don't have a defense.
Yeah,
and the 3Ds are disrupt, distract, and disinform. Their purpose here is, as they started out by storming meetings, who knows what antics will disrupt the upcoming hearings during their 45 minutes, or during the Democrats' 45 minutes. The efforts to distract by bringing Biden and Clinton and the Pizzagate and everything else into this. Seriously, this is a very real possibility. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, to disinform the public by hammering those distractions, hammering away at those distractions.
Yeah, the whole idea is, if both sides are guilty, then no one's guilty. So what they're trying to do with this entire process is to make it seem, well, Joe Biden's doing these things, and Hunter Biden's over there doing those things, and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, blah, 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 blah. And then people who haven't been following this every day like we do, with our faces mashed up against our computer screens and so on, they're going to go, well, both sides are stupid and guilty, so fuck them all. Pox on both their houses, and then they're going to walk away and become ambivalent about it. And ambivalence,
that's a real risk.
Yeah, ambivalence leads to a diminishing amount of support. And so I think that's the Republican strategy ultimately. But more discussion on this coming up here in just a second. But first, got to ask you a question, Buzz. When was the last time you whitened your teeth? Now, I'm not a teeth whitening. I've never had my teeth whitened. But when was the last time you have done it yourself? Anytime?
Well, I use a lot of whitening products every day, but the last time I had it done professionally has been a few years. So I'm no longer on television, and with good reason.
You know, I don't do it. I mean, I wish I was that attentive to it. In fact, I haven't had my teeth cleaned in a couple of years, which I need to go and do.
Oh, that's
now,
do that. I'll make an appointment for you.
But of course, a dentist, the cost is out of pocket, and it's a fortune, and it's time off of work. And you get those teeth whitening trays. They're sloppy, expensive, and they burn your gums. And then the teeth whitening strips cost a fortune, and you barely notice a difference at all. But the holidays are coming. Office parties, family gatherings, cringeworthy pics of you smiling with those discolored coffee stained teeth. Not you, Buzz, but I'm just talking to people in general. Not me, not this year. I'm going to have a sparkly, pearly white smile because I am holding my fresh new box here of Power Swabs, brand new sponsor here on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. You never really whitened until you've whitened with Power Swabs. They're clinically proven to whiten an average of 2 shades in the first 5 minutes. That's 2 shades in just that amount of time. Power Swabs will never leave my teeth and gums all sore and sensitive like other whitening treatments, and it's totally safe and effective on all dental work. If you're not happy, Power Swabs are backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. You need to try Power Swabs, and you will not believe how much whiter your teeth will be in just 5 minutes. I got you a great deal. Here it is. Go to buypowerswabs.com and use my code SEXY for 40% off, an additional $10 off, plus a free quick stick. Yeah, that's right. 40% off plus $10 off plus a free quick stick. Or you can call 1-800-668-1749 and use my code SEXY. That's buypowerswabs.com. The code, once again, SEXY, S-E-X-Y. Visit buypowerswabs.com today. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
Nobody knows where we're from, a sliver beneath frozen sun. Doesn't matter to anyone. Oh, I cry a little, 'cause this was home, this was mine. And who's to say what is civilized? We fought no wars, we burned no skies, yet we're caught in.
Yeah, this is the great Jesse Terry and Alex Wong, and a song called Nowhere from their brand new EP titled Kivalina. Now, this is a really important project because they're releasing this to raise awareness about this little tiny fishing village in Alaska called Kivalina that is being really impacted by the climate crisis, where these indigenous Alaskans use ice floats to go out and hunt,
right.
And they're not able to do it now, or they're becoming greatly restricted in doing it because of the melting ice and the climate crisis itself. And so I'm going to be talking to Jesse Terry and Alex Wong tomorrow on the interview
Excellent.
Show.
Yeah,
Excellent. About this yeah. entire issue. We're going to be talking a lot about the climate crisis. We're talking a little bit about music, too. Jesse Terry's an ongoing favorite here on the show. And boy, this EP, man. I mean, you talk about chills. This is a chills-inducing record. Link in the description. You can buy it everywhere you get your digital music and so on. So please support all of our great recording artists, all of our independent bands and recording artists. BobSeska.com/music if you want to submit. Thank you to everyone who's submitted so far. Really appreciate it. It's
thank
a real
you.
Honor to get to play all
That's
this stuff.
That's great what you're doing.
Okay, let's dig back into impeachment here. You may have heard Mick Mulvaney withdrew his request to join a federal lawsuit seeking whether or not he should comply with subpoenas to testify. He is, of course, making things worse for his boss, like they all are.
May I recap this briefly?
Yes.
First, he said he wasn't going to testify.
Uh-huh.
And then he joined a lawsuit that he really wasn't supposed to be a part of.
Yep.
That basically asks the question of a court, does a person follow a presidential order, or do they follow a congressional subpoena when those two things conflict? What supersedes? We're waiting for a court ruling on that.
Right.
Bolton and his former assistant have such a lawsuit. Mulvaney tried to glom onto it. And then that was like yesterday afternoon. By last night or overnight sometime, Mulvaney switched and said, no, I don't want to be part of their lawsuit. I'm going to do my own lawsuit.
I see.
To ask the same question. So that's like his third position on this. And then about mid-morning today, he said, no, that's off. I'm just flat going to obey the president and not testify. So that's the ride that we've been on with Mick over the last 24 hours.
Yeah, you know, I get the impression from the rules, and I could be wrong. My interpretation of the rules is that Mick Mulvaney's obstruction, his refusal to submit to the subpoena, to his refusal to testify, is going to be another, maybe even a sub item under an article of, I don't know if it's going to be an article in and of itself, but it's certainly going to be a part of the obstruction of Congress charges that are inevitable.
And here's the thing. Here's what I expect to happen, because lots and lots of people went to jail in Watergate.
Yeah.
They really did. A lot did. And I expect that'll happen again this time. The way this works is first we impeach the president, and then we go back and we criminally charge the people who were complicit in all the bad things the president did, who's just been impeached. So my answer to folks who say, and to the folks who say, you know, arrest him, arrest these lawmakers, the arrests will come. But the first things first, impeaching the president. So first is to make those obstructions articles of impeachment.
Yeah.
The second is to then criminally prosecute these individuals.
Right. And then meanwhile, we've got the State Department official Chris Anderson, who testified, I believe it was yesterday. Everything goes back to Russia with all of this.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, the whole Ukraine story is so inextricably linked to Russia and Donald Trump's fealty to Vladimir Putin. But Chris Anderson has testified that Trump called John Bolton at home because Trump heard on CNN that we're getting tough on Russia in the Black Sea. And as we've seen on Rachel Maddow and some of the other news shows, that Russia is trying to seize, and I think they've seized all of Ukraine's oil rigs in the Black Sea by force, obviously. And so this was going on, and the United States was planning on pushing back against Russia in this regard. And Donald Trump heard that. I was like, no, don't push back. No. They're our pals. I have
not
business
Russia.
Deals with them. Yeah, yeah. Well, he didn't.
Ixnay Donald Trump didn't, on the usheray.
Right. It's just the obvious move. Once again, another move in which Donald Trump is telegraphing his loyalty to Vladimir Putin and Russia.
Right.
And he will never stop. He will never, ever stop doing that. He is guilty. He is compromised. And I think by now, it's amazing to me that this is still regarded. In fact, Jonathan Chait wrote a piece about this. It's amazing to me that this is still regarded as a wild conspiracy theory. And I can only imagine that it's because of Bill Barr and what happened last March with the release of the Mueller report, and how just the very existence of Bill Barr's letter has turned a lot of people in the press against covering the Russia angle on all of this. And it's really, really disturbing, because we shouldn't ignore what's going on with Russia, and we are.
Well, yeah. And Russia's name is coming up so much in this testimony, and because I think you're going to see more things from the Mueller report. The lawmakers have documents now from the Mueller report they did not have before. So I think you'll see this tied together. To me, the real clue, the real tip-off, and a moment that filled me with pride, was when Nancy Pelosi stood up at that table, the cabinet meeting room table.
Oh, yeah.
And pointed at Donald Trump and said, "With you, all roads lead to Russia."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was great. That's when I knew she had the goods on him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's where you're going to see that, hopefully, play out on TV over the next several days.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, in the Bolton sphere of things here, I found it interesting that it turns out John Bolton has the same lit agent as Anonymous. It's the Anonymous White House staffer who wrote the New York Times op-ed.
Which
now
is the same literary agent, I believe, that represented Jim Comey.
Okay. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. So do you have any guesses? Who are your guesses? Have you even thought about this, who Anonymous might be?
I have, and I can't pinpoint anybody. This is like an Agatha Christie mystery.
Yeah, it kind of is.
It could be any of them.
Mm-hmm.
It really could. And from what we're hearing from the whistleblower and from some of the testimony that was released this week, there are a number of people who feel the same way. Certainly that is said in the book by Anonymous, saying, look, I'm a senior White House official, and I can tell you that other senior White House officials feel exactly as I do. And so this is, you know, a lot of people, you know, everybody's got to complain about something, whether it's PBS or whether it's this book by Anonymous saying, oh, well, not very courageous. They really didn't tell us anything we didn't already know about the guy. Well, there actually are some revelations in there, and I think it's important to document it and really to confirm our expectations, our suspicions. And so, you know, I don't know why we keep hating people who are really on the side of democracy. That's, you know, it bothers me sometimes, the anger, like I said with that tweet earlier, that I see in some progressives, thankfully not the majority of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you said, there are real actual revelations in this. Obviously, right, we can continue to debate the character of the author, him or herself, but the revelations seem to play out based on what we already know about Donald Trump. They seem to confirm a lot of things that we already knew, but then also added some new things that I don't think we knew yet. Like, for example, one of the excerpts here, I think, is really terrifying, and it's also a little bit funny.
Which one?
Yeah. It's one of the many funny yet terrifying things in the Anonymous book. For example, quote, it's like showing up at the nursing home at daybreak to find your elderly uncle running pantsless across the courtyard and cursing loudly about the cafeteria food as worried attendants tried to catch him. The author writes, you're stunned, amused, and embarrassed all at the same time. Only your uncle probably wouldn't do it every single day, in italics. His words aren't broadcast to the public, and he doesn't have to lead the U.S. government once he puts his pants on. That is one small excerpt from the Anonymous book.
Yeah, and it's filled with a very colorful writing like that. Whoever this is, I think, is an aspiring writer.
Yeah.
And the whole book is that colorful and that descriptive, which is could be a little tiring. I don't know what the book is going to be like, actually. Here's what I want to say in defense of the author that so many progressives chose to attack as not being helpful enough. True, they weren't. But what we learned is that they considered this midnight self-massacre, to which a lot of folks have said, well, why didn't you? That would have really made a statement. Well, here's why. They said they decided to stay to continue their efforts to try to rein in the president that is described so colorfully in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly, above all else, they worried that if they all left at once, if all these professionals, all these grown-ups, even if we don't agree with their politics, if all these grown-ups were to leave at once, it would further destabilize an already teetering government.
Yeah, jeez.
So
you're right about that.
So, you know, badmouth Anonymous at your peril, I think, because Anonymous may have done more good than harm by staying put.
Here's another quote, another section from the Anonymous book that, again, confirms what we all believe Donald Trump is like, but gives us an actual set of examples along these lines. Quote, I've sat and listened in uncomfortable silence as he talks about a woman's appearance or performance, the author writes. He comments on makeup. He makes jokes about weight. And of course, women love jokes about weight. He critiques clothing. He questions the toughness of women in and around his orbit. He uses words like sweetie and honey to address accomplished professionals.
Yes.
This is precisely the way a boss shouldn't act in a work environment. Another insight into Donald Trump's behavior behind the scenes.
And more colorful language. I'll switch off with you here.
Yeah.
At one point described as like a 12-year-old in an air traffic control tower pushing the buttons. And you've said this before, pushing the buttons of government indiscriminately, indifferent to the plane skidding across the runway and the flights frantically diverting away from the airport.
Oh, my God.
Fuck them.
Yeah, I've said all along one of Donald Trump's things is, what does this button do? I mean, not literally, not in the literal sense, but he's always thinking, like, what if I do this? How do you think they're going to react if I do that? That's his indiscriminate way of setting policy. He doesn't care about the long-term ramifications. He gets this devilish notion in his head that he just likes to walk up to the game board and just throw it across the room and see how everybody reacts, running and scrambling and picking up the pieces. He loves the chaos. He thrives on it. At one point he said, according to Anonymous, he said, we get these women coming in with like 7 children. They are saying, oh, please help. My husband left me. They are useless. They don't do anything for our country. At least if they came in with a husband, we could put them in the fields to pick corn or something.
Oh my God.
There, and there's your racism right there.
Yeah. There's your president.
Yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, president. The president of the United States.
Yay.
And the author is a senior White House official with firsthand knowledge of the president.
Well, you want to know my guess for Anonymous? My guess is
yes,
John Kelly. I think it's John Kelly or maybe Rex Tillerson. I would say Rex Tillerson is my second choice.
Sure. Neither one of them are still there, though. And as I understand, this person is still a senior.
I didn't know that they were still working inside the administration.
This makes the guessing a little harder.
Yeah, it genuinely does. I guess, you know what, my third choice then? Someone we don't hear a lot about.
Right.
Dan Scavino, for example, Donald Trump's social media guy, maybe. I don't know. My third option is from the Underpants Gnome business model. Question mark. Could be a complete no name. All right. We're going to take one last break here and come back.
Before we do, can I share a stupid thought that I had?
Oh, yes, please.
We've heard a testimony this week from Laura Cooper at the Pentagon and Catherine Croft from the State Department. If Laura Cooper married Catherine Croft, she'd be Laura Croft.
Perfect.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Right? Who knew?
My favorite video game of all time. And it's not because of the boobs. Well, maybe a little.
It's a game reference, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it is. I had no idea you had it in you, Buzz. Are you sure you're not a Gen Xer? Gen X.
No.
Buzz Burbank.
No, I'm an okay boomer.
All right. Back with more show after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com. Bob Seska.
This is Prehab, Liar, Liar. Yep. Love this song. This is appropriately angry. Song is from the I Haven't Been Completely Honest album by Prehab. Yeah.
I like this a lot.
Jason Kay, frequent listener of the show. And you got to buy this album. I highly recommend the new Prehab album. Okay.
And you notice I didn't step on the vocal coming out of the spot.
So. I noticed that. Thank you. Yeah,
you're welcome.
All right.
My job, I consider my mission here today to minimize your editing.
That's right. Thank you very much for that. Always appreciated. Okay, moving along here. Nikki Haley has been in the news. She's got a book coming out claiming that, and this is where I get my Rex Tillerson and John Kelly guess, although it's now pretty much moot. But she said, according to her new memoir, that Rex Tillerson and John Kelly tried to recruit her to ignore Trump and help them work around him, and she refused. Well, there you go. That is Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley has zero chance of becoming president as long as she continues to telegraph her loyalty to Donald Trump. And I'm not sure where, again, I don't understand why these people are wrapping their arms around this goofball, this clown, this petty tyrant. It doesn't make any sense to me why they're staking their reputations on this guy.
Or does she know he's doomed and she's really appealing to his supporters in what still could be a presidential bid for her? It's hard to read because she strikes me as a conniving person.
Yeah, you know? A little bit.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where I get that, but that would appear to be, to me, what's going on here. Do you know what the first thing occurred to me when I heard this news, when mm-hmm. I heard this thing about, Nikki Haley says Tillerson and tried to recruit her? My first thought was, well, the Democrats call Rex Tillerson and John Kelly. I go, thanks, Nikki. You just gave us two great witnesses. We'll take them.
Yeah.
You know, and so in an odd way, I mean, so many things are going on here. In an odd way, she's helping the Democrats defeat Trump. She's helping them in a way, a small way. She's thrown them a little bone to help them get Trump because she's yeah. revealed what they have said. And at the same time, she's promoted herself among the Trump voter base by fawning for the president, who, because of everything else and regardless of everything else, may well be headed out the door.
Yeah.
So in some way, I mean, there's a lot going on here. This bounces off several walls.
I don't trust her. I think her right. Her loyalty to Donald Trump supersedes any moves along those lines of what you were describing, which I think is completely valid. I think it's perfectly acceptable and a significant possibility that she's kind of playing both sides against each other or trying to pretend as if she's a red hat while at the same time kind of throwing little nuggets of information to the Democrats. I think this is obviously welcome confirmation that there were elements outside of the whoever Anonymous is who were actively trying to flummox Donald Trump from within.
Oh, yes. Yeah. As the whistleblower, other people have testified
yeah.
in closed door sessions so far and soon in public hearings. This was widespread. This was a widespread understanding of what was going on.
By the way, I've been saying since maybe one of the first hearings that have ever occurred during the Trump administration, one of the first congressional hearings to ever involve Trump administration senior officials. Like I'm thinking right. of, for example, all of the intelligence community heads.
Right.
The head of the NSA and head of the CIA and Dan Coats and all the rest of them, and how they were pulling that confused kid sound anytime they were asked a question about what goes on inside the Trump administration. My hunch was they all signed non-disclosure agreements, so it wasn't a matter of executive privilege. They simply couldn't talk about anything that was going on inside the Trump administration, even things that didn't fall under the auspices of classified information. So it turns out now we fast forward a few years, and I don't know, at some point in the maybe in the past couple of weeks, maybe less recently than that, it's emerged that yeah, all of these Trump administration officials are in fact signing non-disclosure agreements, including John Bolton possibly. But I saw in a conversation last night on Lawrence O'Donnell with John Heilman where they were discussing the existence of non-disclosure agreements and how they're really not enforceable, so you can't
exactly
yeah
bingo.
But the yeah. fact that they exist is something that I find
it's
dubious.
Disturbing.
In and of itself. Yeah, yeah.
It's disturbing. It's something that Donald Trump has practiced every step of the way in his business life,
yeah.
and he just continued it right into government. And I think I may have said months and months and months ago on your show that a lot of the folks in the White House who were asked or compelled to sign DNAs were told by White House lawyers who leaned in and whispered to them, this doesn't really mean anything, but Trump wants you to sign it.
Wow.
And so a lot of them knew from the very start that this was a meaningless piece of paper. They were nervous about it, but they wanted to keep their jobs, many of them career professionals.
Yeah, well, they have used, obviously, this excuse, whether they believe it to be true or not. They've used it as an excuse to not deliver information to Congress when requested. So, yeah, and some have, obviously. But when did we get confirmation that the NDAs existed? Is there a hard date that this occurred, or like a general idea? I'm not, because I don't remember it ever emerging in the news officially that there were NDAs signed by White House staffers and cabinet officials.
I would have to do a search of my archives. It's probably been a year. You know, you lose track of time in this administration. But it's probably been a year or so ago that I reported that these NDAs had been distributed in the White House. And, you know, hell, maybe it's 2 years now. I don't know. But these NDAs, it's somewhere in my archives, these NDAs had been distributed in the White House, oftentimes with assurances, don't worry, this really doesn't mean anything. It's not enforceable, but you need to sign it to keep the boss happy.
Damn it. God damn you, fire hose of news. The fire hose of news has flummoxed me again.
You,
yes, because I didn't.
You missed a drop. You missed a drop.
Yeah, I know. What can I say?
No shit!
Getting a lot of mileage out of this.
You missed a drop.
Shit, Bob.
What's that? What'd you say?
I said he missed a drop.
That's right.
I forget about the delay. I was trying to join the chorus there. Well, I see we're out of time.
Yeah, we're out of man. Okay, well, lots of additional information here to get to on the post-mortem show. Make sure to sign up on our Patreon page, bobseskashow.com or patreon.com/bobseskashow. Or actually, you can just click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo at bobseska.com. Take your pick. Any way you do it, it's going to get you there. And if you sign up for $5 a month, well, you get a couple of post-mortem shows every damn week where after this music is done playing, we just keep on talking. It's bonus material, bonus content, bonus features, whatever you want to call it, value-added information. I don't know how else to describe it. Yeah. Again, that's bobseskashow.com if you want to support the show. And we are still doing our contest, even though I don't think we're going to make it to 1,000 subscribers on our Patreon page before the end of the year. I don't know if we're going to do it. Seem possible. Yeah. Okay, and of course, Buzz Burbank News and Comment. It is going to be the best hour of news that you hear all week, and of course, it's going to be
despite what you've heard here today. It's really a pretty good newscast. Yes. Done by a different guy.
Yes, right. Gen Xer Buzz Burbank is hosting this month.
That's right.
Yeah. This week, obviously, you're going to have lots of impeachment news, I assume. Gavel-to-gavel coverage of the hearings and everything tomorrow, huh?
I suppose I could squeeze some in.
That's right.
I'll have it all.
BuzzBurbank.com, RealmNetwork.com. Listen everywhere you get your podcasts. And the same thing goes for the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. The entire slate of Sexy Liberal shows, SexyLiberal.com. Of course, you can hear my show, Stephanie Miller's show, Jody Hamilton's show, Dana Goldberg's show. Let's see what else. Oh, my God. John Fugelsang's show and so much more. That's at, again, SexyLiberal.com. Don't forget to tell all your friends and give everyone a 5-star rating and review. We appreciate that so much. And, oh, yeah, teeny tiny announcement. Guess what I just found out today?
What?
This podcast is the number 2 podcast on Apple Podcasts Politics in Egypt.
Shut the front door.
They love me in Egypt. They love this show. I am moving the entire show to Egypt, where the love is. Number 2 in Apple Podcasts Politics in Egypt.
They got a lot of sand.
I don't know why. Postmortem show coming up next. See you over there, folks. Bye-bye.
Ryan Knight, and if you've enjoyed this podcast, you're going to love my podcast, Amped Up with Proud Resister, where we dive deep into progressive issues, Trump's crimes.
And we have great guests like Rosie O'Donnell, Rob Reiner, and Malcolm Nance.
You're such a name dropper.
Oh, you know.
So come on and join us at Amped Up with Proud Resister on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network.